Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, July 14th, 2025. From the front page, Macon County Farm Bureau, Ag class in session. Teachers get a lesson in agriculture, opportunities for school year, by Danette Beckett. Warrensburg. For Our Lady of Lourdes kindergarten teacher Kathy Berenger, the recent Macon County Farm Bureau Ag in the Classroom program was as special for her as it would have been for her students. "It's like Christmas," she said. Approximately 25 local educators participated in the program, which was held at Perfect Pear in Warrensburg, ready to learn how agriculture agencies can help them in the classroom. "They have it once a year in the summer," Berenger said. "It's like a summer institute for us." Each year, the teachers are given new agriculture-related information. Last year, Berenger learned about dairy cows. This experience encouraged her to invite a cow to meet the kindergarten students. "A lot of these children have never seen a dairy cow," she said. "The cow is brought to the school, allowing the students the opportunity to pet the cow and learn more about the process of getting the milk they drink and eat. But they do not get to milk the cow," Berenger said. The Macon County Farm Bureau invited the educators, ranging from pre-kindergarten to high school teachers, to the event. After learning about past agriculture programs for her students, Susan Mattingly, Warrensburg Latham kindergarten teacher, said she has learned some of the agricultural concepts as well. "They learn a lot of facts about cows and calves that I personally didn't know," she said. "Living in a rural area, it's important for them to know these things." Speakers at the event provided information on the various breeds of cattle, such as Angus, heifer, Simmental, and Shorthorn, as well as the difference of each type of cow. "A heifer is one that hasn't had a baby. A cow has had a baby. A bull is a male. And the steer has been castrated," said Olivia Hoots with the Illinois Beef Association. More information on dairy cows was presented by Midwest Dairy. Snack time was mixed with craft time, with the butter the participants learned to make. Manufacturers use various dairy products to make high-protein meals, according to Haley Bode with Midwest Dairy. 3 glasses of milk contains the exact amount of nutrients as 4 large hard-boiled eggs, 7 cups of raw kale, 3 cups of cooked kidney beans, 3 cups of sliced red peppers, and 15 sardines, she said. Although learning more about livestock was interesting, the participants were excited to learn how they could get funding for educational opportunities. Joe Bauer presented the educators with information on available field trip grants through the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, as well as the INTIES program, a professional development program opportunity. "If you want to do some cool things at cool places with cool people, these high spots are the way to go," Bauer said. One of the upcoming INTIES programs is scheduled at the Illinois Raptors Center in Decatur. Information on the available grants was especially important to Mattingly and several other participants. "It's getting harder and harder for schools to be able to afford to send us on more than one field trip. So to have another avenue for funding is exciting," she said. "It's good to get kids outside the classroom and in nature." Other presenters included local growers on how they sell area-grown commodities. A central location to sell the products is Warrensburg's Perfect Pear. Aaron Kellerman, co-owner, partners with local growers as well as the Macon County Farm Bureau. "This brings awareness to the Perfect Pear and our event space," she said about the recent Ag in the Classroom program. "It encompasses what we're trying to do here in our food and grocery area." Several local products, including honey, butter, meats, cheese, fresh vegetables, and jams, line the shelves of Perfect Pear's grocery room. "It really fits in with the Ag in the Classroom," Kellerman said. And there were, of course, a few pictures associated with this article, including one of Jamie Copper, a kindergarten teacher at Warrensburg Latham Elementary School, shaking heavy whipping cream to make butter during a dairy demonstration at the Macon County Farm Bureau Ag in the Classroom program. And also a picture of fresh local tomatoes and honey from Sass's apiary are among the local agriculture products at the Perfect Pear in Warrensburg. Returning to the front page, Coles County. Bystanders help save horses from Coles County Fairgrounds fire, by Rob Stroud and Scott Perry. Charleston. Bystanders joined together to rescue some 40 horses from a burning barn at the Coles County Fairgrounds. Andrea Hooper of Charleston said she was driving by the fairgrounds along State Street, Illinois 316, around 9:15 p.m. Friday, when she saw what appeared to be a fire at the north end of one of the horse barns. Driving onto the fairgrounds, she said she observed a hay bale ignite, and the fire quickly spread. After calling 911 and a family member who was on the fair board, she went to work with other people on the grounds to save the horses. "As many as we could get out, we got them out," Fair Board President Mark Grant said. The 40 horses had been housed in barn number 3, the site of the fire, and in adjacent barns numbers 1 and 3. These 3 barns and others on the fairgrounds house horses that compete in summer harness racing events at area fairs, including the upcoming Coles County Fair on July 27th through August 3rd. While some of the horses were contained in nearby livestock pens, show rings, and trailers, others made their way to the midway, and at least 2 were believed to be loose on the nearby Lincoln Prairie Grass Trail bike path. 5 horses located in the fire-involved structure were found deceased during primary and secondary searches. Kenneth Lucas of Mattoon said he was headed home from Walmart when he noticed flames coming from one of the barns. Lucas said he pulled into the fairgrounds and ran in to help horse owners Chris and Jill Brown, who were trying to keep the fire down. "We got out as many horses as we could until the smoke and heat overwhelmed us," Lucas said. "For all that was there with me, trying to save those beautiful horses, bless your hearts. For the few we lost, I'll never forget it. Those weren't just horses. Those were someone's best friend, someone's lucky token, someone's love and joy. But most of those horses were alive, just like us." Charleston Fire Chief Tim Meister said the horse barn was fully involved in flames when the first crews arrived on the scene shortly after 9 p.m. Meister said there were still horses in the barn, plus the people who were evacuating them. Charleston fire personnel initiated a defensive fire attack to contain the fire and prevent it from spreading to adjacent barns. Multiple alarms were requested to bring in additional resources. Meister said crews were able to quickly contain and knock down the fire, despite the large amount of wood, hay, and other flammable materials there. Due to significant structural damage, interior firefighting operations were halted for the safety of personnel. Heavy machinery was brought in to assist in overhaul efforts. Meister said there were no fire-related injuries to people on scene, other than some of those evacuating the horses receiving minor burns. Meister said one bystander sustained minor injuries after being kicked by a horse while assisting with evacuation. No transport to the hospital was required. The Charleston Fire Department remained on the scene until approximately 1 a.m. Saturday. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. The Charleston Fire Department was assisted on scene by crews from the Mattoon Fire Department, Lincoln Fire Protection District, Ameren, Illinois, Coles County 911, Charleston Fire Department, and Snyder Farms. Also from the front page, agribusiness, shifting the crop safety net. Farm payment programs move away from market ties, by Benjamin Harold, Illinois Farmer Today. The U.S. crop safety net has gradually changed over time, as Congress has emphasized different factors in risk management for farmers, as well as the food supply. Carl Zuloff, Ohio State University Ag Economics professor, says that farm safety net has shifted after decades of counter-cyclical payments for farmers. In other words, the amount of government support increased while market prices fell. From 1975 through 2006, crop safety net payments were negatively correlated or counter-cyclical with private market returns, he said. High payments occurred when market returns were low. Since 2006, no correlation has existed. Payments have been high, even when market returns were high. Zuloff co-authored FarmDoc articles with University of Illinois authors Jonathan Kappas, Kerry Schnitke, and Nick Paulson on the shifts in U.S. safety net policy. They said the last 50 years have seen different market return periods. From 1975 to 80, farm private market return was generally good, coinciding with a large increase in exports of U.S. field crops. Then, 1981 to 2006 saw generally challenging times with often negative returns. After that, 2007 to 13 saw good returns, supported by the renewable fuels standard. Then came the 2014 to 23 period, with private market returns negative for several of those years. The crop safety net's transformation is evident when comparing the two prosperity periods, the author wrote. During 1975 to 80, safety net payments approached zero, averaging 2% a year. During 2007 to 13, payments averaged 9% a year, even though private market returns averaged 13% a year. State news. Audit. Climate efforts flopped. Equity grants, hiring stall in 21 Climate Act, by Olivia Olander, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker's Economic Development Agency fell short in implementing elements of the governor's landmark climate bill aimed at ensuring social equity in the effort to move the state toward a carbon-free future, Illinois' Auditor General said in a report released last week. From June 2022 to June 2024, the state's Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity failed to implement programs designed to assist clean energy contractors in underserved areas and to deliver clean energy jobs training to people exiting Illinois prisons, two social equity elements that were part of one of the country's most ambitious climate bills, the audit found. The Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, or CEJA, outlines the Pritzker administration's plans for reaching 40% renewable energy by 2030, while also creating opportunities for workers from underserved groups. Christian Mitchell, the governor's pick as his running mate for next year's election, led negotiations on the law when he was a deputy governor in 2021. It's obviously frustrating when you see this legislation not make progress, and it's taken time to fully staff those agencies and ensure those programs are on deck, said Francisco Lopez Zavala, who leads workforce programs at the Illinois Environmental Council. But I continue to remain very positive. The laws contain many specific programs designed to bring climate job opportunities to workers from diverse backgrounds. But several fell short in the first years that the law was on the book, the audit said. For example, the law designates the Clean Energy Contractor Incubator Program as a central small business support program to provide services including low-cost capital, training, mentorship, and networking at certain sites in Illinois communities, according to an October 2023 press release. While the department said it selected sites for awards, no grants were executed by the end of the examination period, the audit said. Continuing with some national news, faith. IRS sets politics, religion at odds. By Fatima Hussein, Washington. A surprise move by the IRS that would allow pastors to back political candidates from the pulpit without losing their organization's tax-exempt status is drawing praise from conservatives and even some progressive religious groups, but concern from other leaders of faith, along with tax and legal experts. A 1954 provision in the tax code, called the Johnson Amendment, says churches and other nonprofits could lose their tax-exempt status if they participate or intervene in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. The rule was rarely enforced. While the IRS did not go as far as calling for the repeal of the Johnson Amendment, it said in court documents that communications in good faith by a church to its flock does not amount to intervening or affecting the outcome of a political campaign. Communications from a house of worship to its congregation in connection with religious services through its usual channels of communication on matters of faith do not run afoul of the Johnson Amendment as properly interpreted, the IRS said. The new IRS interpretation came after decades of debate and most recently lawsuits from the National Religious Broadcasters Association and other conservative churches complaining that the amendment violates their First Amendment rights, among other legal protections. Speaking to reporters, President Donald Trump called the IRS's assessment terrific. "I love the fact that churches can endorse a political candidate," he said. "We have a lot of respect for the people who lead the church." While some congregations see a new freedom to speak openly about preferred candidates, others see opening for campaign finance corruption, new pressures on religious leaders, and an overall entanglement between church and state. Robert Jeffress, pastor of a Baptist megachurch in Dallas and a Trump ally, called it the right decision. He said his church's tax-exempt status was threatened because of an IRS investigation into their political endorsements, costing the megachurch hundreds of thousands in legal fees. "The IRS has no business dictating what can be said from the pulpit," he said. "They need to stay the heck out of our churches." Calvary Church Chino Hills, a Southern California megachurch led by Jack Hibbs, has been endorsing candidates for years, particularly in local elections. Gina Gleason, director of the church's political engagement team, said she hopes the move will encourage smaller churches previously hesitant for fear of triggering an IRS response. I'd have thought if the IRS had targeted any church, it would have been us, she said. But we got sound legal advice from lawyers and religious liberty organizations that explained we were within our constitutional rights. For Democrats trying to connect with people of faith, this decision is timely, said Doug Padgett, pastor and executive director of Vote Common Good, a progressive and evangelical Christian organization. Conservative pastors who have blatantly been endorsing candidates, regardless of the Johnson Amendment over the years, created a disadvantage, causing Democrats to step away from faith voters, he said. There was a true imbalance between how many more opportunities there were for Republican voters. The IRS statement, Padgett said, also puts an end to the delicate dance pastors and congregations were forced to do. You could talk about politics in the church gym, but not in the sanctuary or from the pulpit, he said. Pastors could express political opinions on their personal Facebook page, but not on the church website. It's just silly. Tax and constitutional law experts, meanwhile, are wary of what entanglements could arise from the IRS's new position. Philip Hackney, a University of Pittsburgh School of Law professor who studies the relationships between churches and tax authority, said the decree could allow churches to push new boundaries. It's essentially creating a political intervention tax shelter for churches, Hackney said. It has the potential to corrupt their mission more toward politics and less from their true beliefs. Other religious groups, particularly in faith communities of color, are viewing it with skepticism. The Reverend Mark Whitlock, senior pastor at Reed Temple African Methodist Episcopal Church in Glendale, Maryland, said it raises more questions than it answers. For those of us in the Black Church, this decision is being viewed with caution, apprehension, and skepticism, he said. The question we're asking is, why now? Whitlock said he will continue to do what the Black Church has always done, educating and civically engaging parishioners. His congregants' political views vary, too. If I do say something in church, it needs to be God-centered, God-focused, and a revelation that God gave you, Whitlock said. You can't go to the pulpit as a campaign manager. Turning to page 6 with National and World News, The Digest. Two killed, three hurt in Kentucky shooting spree. Lexington. Two women died Sunday at a Kentucky church in a shooting spree that began when a state trooper was wounded after making a traffic stop, police said. The suspect in both shootings was also killed. The suspect carjacked a vehicle after the traffic stop near Lexington's airport and fled to Richmond Road Baptist Church, where he opened fire, Lexington Police Chief Lawrence Weathers said. Killed in the shootings at the church were a 72-year-old woman and a 32-year-old woman, the local coroner said. Two other people were wounded at the church and taken to a hospital, the police chief said. The suspect was shot by police and dead at the scene, he said. Grand County Lodge destroyed by wildfire. Flagstaff, Arizona. A historic lodge on the Grand Canyon's north rim was destroyed by a fast-moving wildfire, the park said Sunday. The Grand Canyon Lodge, the only lodging inside the park at the north rim, was consumed by the flames, Park Superintendent Ed Cable told park residents, staff, and others in a meeting Sunday morning. He said the visitor center, the gas station, a waste water treatment plant, an administrative building, and some employee housing were among the 50 to 80 structures lost. Two wildfires are burning at or near the North Rim, known as the White Sage Fire and the Dragon Bravo Fire. The latter is the one that impacted the lodge and other structures. The park initially was managing it as a controlled burn, but then shifted to suppression as it rapidly grew to 7.8 square miles, fire officials said. EU tariffs. The European Union will suspend retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods, scheduled to take effect Monday, in hopes of reaching a trade deal with the Trump administration by the end of the month. This is now the time for negotiations, the EU president said Sunday. France. French President Emmanuel Macron on Sunday announced $7.6 billion in extra military spending in the next 2 years because of new and unprecedented threats ranging from Russia to nuclear proliferation, terrorists, and online attacks. Trump marks 1 year since assassination attempt, Associated Press, East Rutherford, New Jersey. President Donald Trump on Sunday marked the one-year anniversary of a failed attempt on his life, joining family, friends, and close advisors to witness Chelsea's dominating FIFA Club World Cup final victory over Paris Saint-Germain. The president joined the players on the field after the match to congratulate the tournament's outstanding performers, presenting PSG players with their runner-up medals and handing Chelsea their championship trophy. Trump and First Lady Melania Trump were greeted with cheers as they arrived at MetLife Stadium, and the president got a smattering of boos when he was briefly shown on the stadium's mega screen. The president waved to the crowd and pumped his fist as he and his entourage arrived at the stadium luxury box, where they took in the match with FIFA president Gianni Infantino and his wife, Lina Al-Eshkar. Other guests spotted in the president's suite included Attorney General Pam Bondi, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, and NFL great Tom Brady. Sunday's match fell on the first anniversary of the assassination attempt Trump survived in Butler, Pennsylvania, while campaigning for president. In an interview with his daughter-in-law and Fox News show host Lara Trump that aired Saturday, Trump briefly touched on the anniversary, but was otherwise muted. The U.S. Secret Service announced last week that six staffers had been disciplined with suspensions ranging from 10 to 42 days without pay over the incident. From page 16, the sports page, Sunday's results from Major League Baseball for local teams, including the Chicago White Sox losing to Cleveland 6-5 in 10 innings. In the National League, St. Louis 5, Atlanta 4, and in interleague play, the Chicago Cubs defeated the New York Yankees 4-1. The All-Star break will be coming Monday through Thursday. Current standings going into the American League for local teams, including the Chicago White Sox, are currently in fifth or last place in the Central Division of the American League with a record of 32-65. In the National League, the Chicago Cubs have a narrow one-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers in the Central Division of the National Leagues. The Cubs' record is 57-39, with the Brewers following at 56-40. In third place is the St. Louis Cardinals with a record of 51-46. Local baseball teams of interest in the statistics for the NL in batting average, Bush of the Chicago Cubs is ninth with a .290 batting average. In home runs, Suzuki of the Cubs and Pete Crow Armstrong of the Cubs both have 25 home runs and a tie for fourth place. In runs batted in, Suzuki of the Cubs is in second place with 77, and Pete Crow Armstrong, also of the Cubs, has 71 runs batted in. Stolen bases, Pete Crow Armstrong is in second place with 27, and Scott of the St. Louis Cardinals with 24. And in slugging percentage, two Cubs again, Bush in third place and Suzuki in fifth place. I guess there's a reason why Pete Crow Armstrong and Bush are playing in the All-Star game this Tuesday. We'll take a short break right now and return with the Decatur Herald and Review with readings from July 14th, 2025. Please stay tuned.